Welcome to episode 146 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I catch up with one of New York's finest sports digital executives, Jane Busman-Wise.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals.
And now, here's your host, who uses DigiSports Sports Biz and SM Sports hashtags equally, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. My name is Sean Callinan, and you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. You might be doing that at the website, sportsgeekhq.com, or your favorite podcast platform, whether it be iTunes, Stitcher, all of those other ones. You should be using Pocket Cast. That's the one that I recommend. And please, if you haven't yet gone to the iTunes store and left a review, I would really appreciate it, at up to 112 across the world. But please send me an email or send me a tweet once you have, so I can see it and know that that was yours. I'd very much like to say thank you. And for those of you who've left 112 so far, thank you very much. As always, if you want to contact me, at Sean Callinan on Twitter, at Sean Callinan on the Sports Biz Slack group. If you haven't joined, go to Sports Biz, sportsgeekhq.com/slack to join up. A lot of the guests, including today's guest, are now in the Sports Biz Slack. Happy to connect and take your questions. We can use the old-fashioned method. No, I'm not talking about sending a postcard, just email. That's old-fashioned now. Sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Really looking forward to being trying to organise this interview for a few years now. Known Jane a while via our association with Seat. Met at multiple seats over the years. She has actually been on the podcast back on episode 80 as part of the panel for one of the early hashtag sports virtual events, and we even pitched this panel for South by Southwest this year. So I've always been nagging Jane to come on the show and have a chat. I was doing so when she was at the Nets, then New York FC, and now she's finally in her role at New York Red Bulls, and I've finally been able to secure some time. And we had a really good chat about both the New York sports scene and also her career in that New York sports scene and some of the differences that she's seen in the different roles across NHL, the NBA, and now in the MLS. So please enjoy this chat with Jane Busman-Wise from the New York Red Bulls. Very happy to welcome good friend of mine, Jane Busman-Wise, the Senior Director of Content and Communications from the New York Red Bulls. Welcome to the podcast, Jane.
Thanks so much, Sean. Happy to finally be able to do this.
I know. We've sort of bounced around. We've caught up at conferences, and I keep tapping you on the shoulder to say we've got to do a podcast. We've done a few panels and stuff, but I'm thankful we've finally been able to lock something in.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited.
So you've had a long time career in New York City, pretty much in almost the last 12 years, working across multiple sports. Do you want to give us a bit of your background in getting into the sports entertainment game?
Yeah, happy to. I've been here in New York City for my career, and started off at a small sports marketing firm. It was a place I'd interned in college. It was a company called TSE Sports Entertainment. Kind of did everything from marketing and PR and did some event planning, and was fortunate enough to travel around the world and go to events like the Pro Bowl and the Masters and the Super Bowl, and had a great experience there. Private equity company bought that firm, and then I moved over to a place called the Sports Museum of America, which was, again, an amazing experience. I worked with every Hall of Fame and national governing body there, and unfortunately was actually went bankrupt about 18 months into my career there. And then I was fortunate to land at Madison Square Garden working for the New York Rangers. It was about 2009, and it was right when sort of digital and social, it was the early days. So I was hired as a on the marketing side, overseeing sort of marketing programs, and social became went from a small bit of my my job there to being, by the end, 3 years later, you know, was really my main focus with the club. And I really started by, I will admit that I read a book on Twitter before we ended up really sort of launching into it and diving in there. And it was early days.
It's strange. It's always interesting hearing people's both start in whether it is social, but also where social started in organizations. In the fact that you know, you're saying here, the Rangers, it sort of was born out of the digital department, where we've had discussions where it's been the domain of the comms team, and it started there as a real comms focus. And then even, you know, there's a couple of teams that social started in the IT department of all places. Do you think that there was an advantage coming from the marketing side and sort of tackling social from marketing even in those early days?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, it really started, I had a very supportive boss at the time, and it was really something that I was interested in, and I had been reading, like I said, a lot about, and just thought I could help out, I could get involved. And, you know, she had been at the organization and still is, and had been at the time there for almost 20 years, and was really tied into the sporting side and whether it was the players and the coaches, great relationships with the PR team. So it made sense, and it's evolved over time, and even to kind of where I will get in my current career. I think for me, it was a great position to be at the time, right when social was becoming, you know, quite popular. When Facebook pages were then launching, I was there with the Rangers in the early days, and then was fortunate to move over to the Nets, who at the time were in New Jersey, and joined right before and in preparation for the move to Brooklyn. So then I was overseeing digital and social for the New Jersey and then Brooklyn Nets and Barclays Center. So was an amazing opportunity to be there as we rebranded the team and opened Barclays Center. And I remember walking through it as a construction site. And I actually live, I can walk to Barclays Center from my apartment. So to be a part of that was an incredible opportunity. And I thought that would be the you know, first time I'd get to launch a team in New York. And, you know, then I was able to join New York City FC in the early days of them being an expansion franchise for Major League Soccer. And I had the amazing opportunity to oversee digital and social there and launch Major League Soccer's 20th franchise in New York City, where we played. And actually, you came to a game at Yankee Stadium, I believe, right?
I did. I did come to a game at Yankee Stadium, and it is a unique experience as someone who's been to Yankee Stadium for baseball. But then I think the game I was there was versus Orlando, and I think Lampard and Villa and Kaká, there was three World Cup winners on the pitch at the same time. I think it was the first time in the MLS. So yeah, it was a lot of fun, that game.
Yeah, and it was incredible. So to be there in the early days of launching a franchise and really in the age in the sort of digital era with an audience, you know, the MLS fan is, as you've probably seen and talked to different folks, is very digitally savvy. For me, it was, you know, we were able to grow faster than I thought. The fan base, you know, while focused on New York, is very international, with ties, obviously, with being a part of the City Football Group and with clubs in Manchester and Melbourne, with players like Villa, Pirlo, Lampard, a coach like Patrick Vieira. The New York City FC, you know, brand it grew very quickly and was an amazing experience. And then most recently, about a month ago, I joined the New York Red Bulls in a new role. So I've gone to the other club here in New York, still within Major League Soccer, and I'm overseeing content and communications as a senior director here. So as kind of we talked a little bit about the evolution of digital, social, content, communications, what we've been able to do is, so I'm actually overseeing both content communications and video on the content side. So we've really brought it all together, knowing that it's kind of where I think the industry and on the team side has really evolved to be, I think, the most efficient. And so, yeah, I'm just 30 plus into the new role here.
Yeah, it's terrific. I mean, I think, like, you know, when people ask me about different people with different backgrounds, yours is so unique in that you've stayed in New York the whole time, but then effectively to have the ability to be in the right place, right time, to effectively launch two franchises in New York, with the New Jersey Nets rebranding and going through that whole exercise, moving to Brooklyn and then launching the New York FC. What were some of the lessons of from your point of view, you know, being at the front of those launches of that, you know, putting out a new brand? And, you know, I know in the New Jersey Nets there was history, but it was a complete rebrand and a city change and a name change and new colors. But then you've got New York FC, which was a completely new franchise, an expansion franchise. What were some of the lessons from those experiences that you learned behind the scenes?
Yeah, I think one of the key lessons was we really wanted our fans to feel connected. There's so much competition in New York and in all sports, but even, particularly in New York with, 12, I think, professional franchises. You've got Broadway, you've got all this. So we wanted our fans to feel the most connected. And that was something I think, we looked at with the Nets. It was also the right time for Brooklyn. Yeah. Having lived in this borough, and it was a time that the borough was kind of going through, really becoming, I think at the time GQ called it like the coolest borough or the greatest city in the US. So it was, for that, it was, how do we reach and engage Brooklyn? We had some, with our players in the community, how do we do a lot of events around the community? And really from a digital, social, and technology perspective, with Barclays Center, we wanted it to be the most state of the art because it felt like, with Brooklyn becoming a tech hub, made a lot of sense. So we wanted fans to feel incredibly connected when they were in the building. At the time, we launched Cisco Stadium Vision Mobile and had, multiple camera angles, live streaming to your phone when you're connected to the Wi-Fi. So we wanted to be wherever our fans were, whether that was the platforms they were on, whether it was providing apps, for iOS and for Android, having the websites be mobile friendly. We really thought about the fans first. And I think the same thing with New York City FC and what we're applying at the Rebels is we want our fans to be at the center of everything that we do. So with New York City FC, it was the fans voted on the crest of the team logo. So I think it was over 100,000 votes came in to determine what that logo would be. And I think incorporating our fans, whether it's into content or in different sort of getting their opinions, just having them be at the heart of it is something that I think you'll see across all sports. And I think all the best teams are doing it. And that's what we're trying to do.
So it is very easy to get to do that when you have that clean slate of, hey, here's a new brand, here's a new team. How do you apply those same tactics? Because they're valid across as traditional established teams. How do you go about applying that, in your new role at the New York Red Bulls to say, we want to maintain, keep the fan focus? How much has been the first, first 30 days, you can't fix everything. Not that everything needs to be fixed, but there's all these things that you want to do. How do you approach those first 30 days? How much has it been you sitting back, seeing how things are operating, and then seeing those small tweaks before you start putting your fingerprints over what you're trying to do in the content side of things?
Yeah, it's that's kind of what I've been doing. I think one of the things that why I've been fortunate is we've got a really good team with a solid foundation, and we've got really great open access, whether it's on the sporting side with our head coach, with our players, with our sporting director. From the start, they've been incredibly welcome and open. We have probably the best access I've ever had working for a team when it comes to, the content we can get. Our video cameraman is, in the locker room, in the huddle, before in the team huddle when they're on the field. So, what we've been able to do, even just quickly, a lot of the content we were doing, just kind of tweaking it to be, we're stripping away some of the more produced audio and really hearing a lot of the raw natural sound because we have great access. So we're producing content that we're kind of calling all access. So we're taking our fans into a training session and you're hearing the coach kind of talk about why we're doing an 11v11 that day, or, you're on the pitch and you can hear the audio of the players before they're taking the field, or they're in the locker room after a win. And one of our most recent games was around one of our big community initiatives is Autism Awareness Night. And you hear Jesse before the game talking about if we win it, a young woman named Julia, who's the daughter of our general manager, would win the, you know, we'd give her the game ball, and we wanted to win that match for her. And it was a big initiative for us. We introduced a new sensory space in the arena. So we really bring fans in. So it's content that you're not seeing anywhere else. You know, you're not getting that on other media sites. And that's, I think, the opportunity that teams have. And that for me coming in, because we've got that access, I think we can create some really unique content. And then, you know, for me and the team, it's how do we best distribute it? What's the length of it? What should live on what platform, on what channels? So what should go on YouTube versus Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and kind of figuring all of that out, you know, is I think the work that we're doing.
It is very much the case of, you know, if you can get that open access, and it is the advantage or the key point of difference that the internal media sport, you know, team media team has opposed to the external media. And then when you do get that access, it is a matter of how do we leverage it the best way, because it's not just being everywhere and recovering everything. It is things like you were just saying, you know, playing with the sound and getting different access. But then it is also, you know, what platform, which pipe do you use to make sure that this content best lives in the best platform? Where are you finding that balance from a platform point of view, and especially if you're sort of diving in on video, where are you finding the best results from a platform to platform point of view? Because it is both the type of content, but then also even stuff like you were talking about then around the length. Like, is there a certain, are you sort of playing with the length to say, well, if it's under 15 seconds, it fits over here on Instagram or Facebook, but a longer form stuff, that's where our fans are consuming on YouTube. How are you playing around with those pieces of content to get the right piece of content in the right platform?
Yeah, and that's the art and the science. I think what we've been, you know, we've really moved into producing some longer form video content. So longer form meaning 8, 12 minutes, even when I was at New York City FC, you know, if it was 15, 18 minutes, really not shying away from that and being able to test and trial and putting that up on YouTube and even putting 5-8 minute up on Facebook and seeing how it's doing. Cause I think, you know, as consumers or fans are evolving, we're seeing people, you know, we've got now in the US, I don't think you guys have, do you have the video tab within the Facebook app yet?
I don't think I have seen it. No, but I have heard it on its way, and it does seem from, you know, all reports that, you know, Facebook's got an Apple app. Twitter's doing the same thing. They're pivoting into this media entity and allowing people to consume it. So it sort of does lend itself to that.
Yeah. So we're really producing, you know, we're not so much thinking about, should this be 3 to 5 minutes? We're thinking about, you know, what's the best story here. And if it's 8 minutes, if it's 10, if it's 12, we're leaving it that long, which I think was a bit of a shift. And I think we're seeing that perform on YouTube. I mean, on Facebook right now in particular, you know, live is our best performing content. As I talk to others at other teams or within sports, you know, no surprise, that's we're going live on a match day a number of different times, everything from if it's an away match, player arrivals to warm-ups on the pitch. So we're physically out on the field, you know, bringing our fans in, showing them that live feed, to sort of the tunnel cam, you know, march out to the field. And then after a win, we'll go, potentially after a win, we could have 3 people on the field live on 3 different platforms across Facebook, Instagram, and Periscope. So it's, you know, I think the approach that we're taking as well is as these platforms continue to shift and evolve, we're trying a number of different types of content. We're utilizing the different platforms to cross promote. Because we want to reach as many fans as we can. We're really looking at the engagement metrics as key. But we know that there's a lot of growth within MLS and particularly within the Red Bulls organization as we can continue to kind of build the club up and the team.
You just sort of touched on there, looking at the engagement and the metrics. How much do you dive into that? Because you can be ruled by the analytics and the metrics that are coming by. And then the other part of it is, you know, the feedback from the fans and the organization. How much are you sort of weighing up those metrics that are coming in to say, yes, this, again, whether it's this live streaming or whether it's long form, How much are you leaning on the stats? And then the other part of it is trusting your, you know, journalistic gut and your team's eye for good content. How do you manage that balance?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, but I think, you know, we're constantly looking at the numbers. I think that's why I like and why I've always enjoyed being in the digital and content side. You can really see you get direct feedback from the fans on all the platforms, and you can see the numbers. And I think we also talk to the platforms, via the league or directly to understand, you know, is Facebook recommending or, you know, what are they recommending more? Are they recommending more video on Instagram right now? Talking to them to understand, you know, what direction, and we might not always know as things change, but I think what you hit on is, at the end of the day, I think we have to really hold ourselves accountable and think about what's good quality content. How do we want, what can we put out there for our fans that's unique, that's interesting, that's different. And there might be some pieces of content that might not perform as well, but it's really important if it's, you know, community initiatives, if it's content about our academy and our homegrown players, if it's about players that are maybe not as well known or not the big name stars, that's incredibly important for us because we want to feature and showcase all of our players and all the different facets of the club. So I think for us, sometimes we have to be willing to say, you know, this might not get the most number of views, but it's an important piece of content for us, whether it's a story, an article, a video, and we do that anyway.
But it's also balance of your content, because if you were just following, you know, the views, then you would follow the algorithms. The algorithms say that Facebook Live is going to give you more reach and more views. Then your whole feed would just be Facebook Live videos, or it would only be highlight videos of goals because we know that they get the numbers. But if you're not, you know, profiling, like you said, your autism awareness night and getting a really good spike and that feel good spike inside your organization and also around that initiative, you can't really compare that to a goal video. It's never going to compare, but you've got to have different metrics around those different things, but you've also got to do a bit of ticking the box of all those different segments of both your market and your content plan. Otherwise, it's going to have that sameness. It's very easy to keep chasing down, you know, your super active fans that love the highlight videos, but it'll end up being the same and you're not broadening your audience.
Exactly. And I think that's the sort of short-term goals and long-term. I think it's having that clear kind of long-term vision about, what's right for the club. And, you know, as you continue to build those hopefully lifelong fans that care about the club, I think, you know, players will change, to your point, goals and highlights, you might be able to get anywhere. But I think why you care about a club is oftentimes more than that. Whether it's, a game or how you, you know, experience it with your family growing up or various moments or how they interact with your community or causes that, you know, you're passionate about. But I think, you know, clubs that are more than just the highlights and star players are the ones that, you know, over the test of time, as there's wins and losses, continue to be successful.
Yeah. And I think the other piece of, I guess, pitching of content and pushing out a content concept, we've been using it a long time, that it sort of takes about 6 weeks for fans to catch on that you're doing something, in a particular manner or releasing a particular series, and then to sort of form a habit around, yes, I want to consume that. So there's that little bit of, you've got to have faith in what you're doing, but you've got to give it a little bit of time to let the fan base see that it's a new thing. If you're just, you know, throwing out a new piece of content or trying something, if you haven't done it a couple of times, the fans haven't been able to attach themselves to it. So it's a little bit, you've got to be, you know, trusting your gut and playing that long game.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think one of the things we've really shifted into is how do we create sort of content strands? So thinking less about kind of one-offs. I mean, while, you know, there are moments where we may want to do that, how can we build out these strands that are reoccurring, whether it's weekly or potentially monthly? To your point, people get used to, they come looking for them. The audience, you know, you're kind of training people what content you're getting on what platforms. But also, one of the things that I've heard you talk about with others on the podcast is, you know, that the commercial opportunity around that, those become opportunities for partners that are far easier to monetize and can honestly have much, I think, stronger ties and be better, assets and drive more value for a partner on those those content strands that are reoccurring.
I've never heard, I like the word content strand. So it is very much, I'm very much a, if you can't name it, you can't sell it. So if you can't say, hey, this is our so-and-so series, then it makes it very easy for the commercial team to sell. But there is that case of you can prepare something and say, this is what we're going to do, and it can be sold. And then the content team can just start doing something, build up that asset, and then realize it's a really valuable asset, either from an engagement point of view or a viewership or a, you know, a fan passion point of view. They just really love it. Building out those content strands is a terrific way to build out those commercial opportunities. Again, you're 30 days into your role as content communications. Where does your role fit in that working with the partnership team and getting some of those commercial opportunities out of digital?
Yeah, we work really closely, and actually our chief commercial officer is a woman that actually used to work for at New York City FC. So we've worked together before, and even worked together in different roles, but was also at the Garden at the same time. So we work really closely with them, everything from with partners on the partnership marketing side on activating. But really, I think for me, it's how do we create content? How do we work with media on a proactive way so that we've got great assets for our partners? How do we figure out from a partner standpoint, you know, what are their goals and objectives, and what might be the right fit within, you know, our assets or our platforms or content? And, you know, how do we create things that become really valuable to that point? So that's something that I've already started to work on, and I think will continue to be, you know, an area for folks in the digital world on the team side, where more and more time is spent, because I think it's what partners are looking for more and more, asking on the digital and particularly in content now.
And I think the advantage you have, you know, 30 days in, you're new in the role, you get to effectively ask the question, why are we doing this piece of content? Who is it for? Has anyone talked about commercializing it? Because you're coming at it fresh, with fresh eyes, you can, you know, see something that potentially has that slight tweak of, here's all the content we're doing, it's great content, and here's the partnerships that we're doing. But you get to have you get to be the fresh voice in the room.
Yeah, and that's where it's been great. People have been really open to those ideas. You know, you never want to come in and just kind of immediately, you know, start changing things. But I think the team's been really open, and I think we've made a couple tweaks, and we sort of some video we were doing before, and now, you know, for example, we've rebranded it kind of All Access with that kind of mindset and that goal in sight as well, kind of to what you talked about. You've got to name it for it to be a real sort of platform or opportunity for a partner.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not about, you know, pointing fingers and saying this is wrong or this needs fixing. It is just that you, having a team that has that openness and to say, oh, this is what we could do. It also it also helps if the whole team can have that approach. So there's not that preciousness of, oh, this is my baby, I've built it, I can't take any feedback, because everyone's pushing towards the same goal, and you want to have that environment where everyone can say, you know, I might be the person that's doing the copy, but I can provide some direction or at least some advice to the video person that might make that slight tweak. And it's those slight tweaks that end up being that, oh, that piece of content went viral. And it was that team effort of people all having their say on different things or coming from different experiences or seeing different content in different feeds, because everyone in your team's got a different Facebook feed. They're all seeing different content. So if someone comes up and says, oh, have you seen what Vice are doing with this video series? How do we, you know, one of the phrases I use is, how do we steal with pride? How do we take that and make it their own? I think that collaborative approach is the one for a successful team.
Absolutely. I think this is actually, and I know you're a big fan, we use Slack here with our team. And I had not used it sort of in a working function before. And it's been incredibly helpful for communicating in a way, whether it's with, you know, larger groups, smaller, more tailored groups. But yeah, I mean, we were sending around, I was looking, some of the things the Players Tribune has been doing lately, especially around, you know, Derek Jeter night, but even just in their naming, I was looking at the other day of calling a video series with the Liberty 1440, because that's the number of minutes in a day, and that's the name of their series. Just thought it was really unique and interesting, was sharing that on Slack with the team the other day. Because I think to your point, you know, it's there are so many good ideas out there, and you can kind of beg and borrow and sort of tweak different ideas to kind of fit what works for your team or your club.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, and I agree, that's, you know, from a Slack point of view, I think setting up a channel, you know, like calling it best practice or that kind of thing, and just, and they are just, you know, it's effectively your own inspo board for your team to say, oh, this is what, you know, another team did, or this is what another sport did, or this is what a, you know, and I like going outside the world of sport and saying, oh, this is what a music entertainment did, or this is what a, you know, like a brand like Players Tribune did. And then it should provide some inspiration to say, oh, this is how we could potentially do something. And it's good just to get different people sharing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for me was one of the really interesting opportunities here is being a part of sort of Red Bull with Red Bull Media House, with Red Bull, and just being a very progressive, innovative company that I'm just kind of starting. Actually, today was working out of the office there, and there's just so many opportunities and how, you know, they've been able to grow a brand in forms of like content. There's a lot there that I think, you know, I'm excited about and was kind of, you know, joining the club that I think is unique in sports.
And it is one of those brands that has adopted that mentality of, oh, we're going to build a whole media ecosystem around our brand into a point where it's, you know, brought in sports teams into the brand that makes it super, you know, super unique. I mean, you know, a lot of people would have seen a stack of Red Bull created content across extreme sports and surfing and, you know, guys jumping out of planes for massive stunts. Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting resource and something you can definitely tap into at the Red Bulls.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's other football clubs in Austria and you know, there's Crash ice skating in Formula One, and there's various athletes across the world. It's been, you know, even just in early days, it's a very creative environment. So there's no shortage of ideas to look around for.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. I know it took us a little bit of time to schedule it. Hopefully we'll catch up soon in person.
Yes.
I want to close with the closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I was thinking about this one. I think it was, I grew up in New Jersey. My dad took me to a Devils game, and he actually caught a puck that was coming my way.
Wow. Too bad.
They barehanded it.
Barehanded the puck. And you're like, if only I had the Vine camera out then, I would be an early viral digital superstar.
Would have been perfect.
Did he have the David Putty style full face paint? That would make this story just a little bit better. As people who know, I use David Putty in a few of my presentations. As a, you know, if those have watched Seinfeld, but he didn't have the full face paint.
No. He's not that that much of a fan. But I did ask him if it hurt at the time, and I remember him saying no. And now he will fully admit that he thought he broke his hand.
Yeah, of course. Rose-colored glasses. It probably is increased in speed. He probably caught it closer to your face. Yeah. It's obviously just going to keep the legend is going to keep getting bigger and bigger. Do you have a favorite food or a favorite food memory at a sports event?
Yeah, you know what I was thinking about it. I went to Target Fields, in Minnesota.
Minnesota, yep.
Out there, and had pork chop on a stick, which was just I thought among the more interesting foods you can get at a ballpark or at a sporting venue. It was actually really good. It was just funny that they served it on a stick.
Now I feel bad that I toured Target Field in the off season. That sounds pork chop on a stick sounds delightful.
Yeah.
Terrific. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Probably pretty boring. I do look at my email probably first, and then I probably Facebook for me would be the next.
Just check in what's happening in the world.
Yeah, you know, because it's a nice mix of you know, check up on work and then kind of work, and because my feed is kind of like probably yours and a lot of people in our world, half work and half, you know, friends, family. So it's a nice mix.
Yeah, you just lean into the algorithm, and Zuck will deliver the stuff that you've clicked on previously. Is there someone that you would like to nominate for the Sports Geek podcast listeners to follow, whether it be someone on Twitter, someone that writes or whatever? Is there a good follow that people should check out?
I'm trying to think. I was thinking about this from an individual standpoint. I think in your last podcast, I think may have said the same kind of thing of where my feed is a bit, especially on Twitter, it's gotten a bit much. So what I found, you know, the hashtag sports email is, it's kind of similar, you know, with yours is a helpful aggregator of kind of the main stories and topics I should look at.
So, I mean, this is, I'm getting more and more people sort of give that similar answer, and not say it's a wrong answer, but the easiest answer, you know, say 3 or 4 years ago is you would start nominating people who you follow and engage with on Twitter. Are you finding yourself doing that less, or as the noise ratio on Twitter is getting higher? Like,
I think for me, I almost, because I focus so much on the team side, and because I'm not the person that's tweeting all the time anymore, but I don't tweet very much personally, you know, probably nearly as much as I should. But yeah, I think it is a bit of the noise factor and maybe me not tweeting enough and thinking of kind of the best. But yeah, for me, it's been helpful to have, you know, like yourself with sending newsletters or hashtag sports or going to a sport techie, things like that.
Yeah, but I mean, and it has, you know, and I've spoken about previously, like tools like Nuzzle that pull out all the articles that people that are in your Twitter feed are sharing. Like, so it's a little bit of the extra, you know, or the flipboards and those kind of things are curating that kind of stuff, and there's less of the personal connection, I guess, on Twitter, because people are using it less, you know, or automating it more. You know, everything I read, I put on, it eventually gets tweeted, but I'm not there tweeting it every single time. So it does make for looser connections. I was having a beer with Shane Harmon last night, and, you know, when we started tweeting and connecting with people, and it would have been in that early time, 2009, 2010, 2011, where it was far easier to reach and connect and have a bit of a conversation, that's far harder to do now. Like, it is easy to connect, like on a LinkedIn and those kind of things, but it's far harder to have that, a bit of a cohesive conversation with someone that was easier to do, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. I think, and even like we were talking, you're now getting content on Slack and they're more sort of feeds.
Yep.
I think that's where it's, almost where we met, like at SEAT, those conferences for me have been incredibly helpful and in building that network sort of in real life that then can transfer digitally, whether it's, you know, via phone calls or email catch-ups and things like that.
Yeah, I can't understate the in real life stuff, like actually meeting people or calling people or connecting with people when they're in town or not in town, that kind of thing. It's still the best advice, because it locks in what might be a loose connection. You know, oh yeah, I know them, we sort of follow each other on Twitter or we're connected. But then once you've met someone and, you know, had a deep dive discussion and shared a beer or two or gone to a ball game or whatever, it sort of locks it in. So that's my advice. If you want to follow someone, follow them, then meet with them, and then it makes it a completely different relationship.
Yeah, I've done that. You know, a number of people that have reached out, you know, over the years on LinkedIn, you know, I think you've done this. I've seen where you're, you know, even if traveling, if it's sort of a mix of work and personal, going to a sporting event, meeting up with someone while they're at a game or a match. People have done that, and I've tried to do that over the years because I do think it really matters, and it gives you an interesting perspective even as you travel to see other games, other venues, and connect with those people in real life.
And so I'm going to give you your answer here, because I'm kicking myself he has not got a mention yet. But someone that you did work with at Barclays is someone that you have to meet in real life, and I'm doing the setup here. and you would be nominating then?
Well, Chip Foley is, you know, while he might not tweet as often as he should, he's a person that, you know, someone that I feel very lucky to have worked with, and and has connected me with so many people in the industry, and was, when we worked together, the head of technology for City Ratner and for Barclays Center. And really, you know, I think why the building is so tech advanced and kind of future proofed. He's he's been a great friend over the years, and he is a total gadget geek. So he keeps me up to date on whatever the newest gadget is.
Yes. And he's someone you have to follow, because I find out from Instagram that he's surfing down the road from me in Melbourne, and I have to message him and say, let's catch up. So, but yeah, he's definitely someone you want to connect with, and trust us when we say, when you're meeting him in real person, it's just as fun. And yes, we'll just leave it at that.
We had to give him a proper shout out here.
Yeah, exactly. Even just for the dueling pianos dedications that he did in Las Vegas last year. So lastly, the social media MVP, if you have to pick one, and you can, and there's two ways, you can answer it two ways. You can say, here's my personal MVP, and then here's me from a work point of view MVP. What social media platform wins your MVP?
Yeah, so personally, my favorite is Instagram. I think it's, you know, it's kind of, I think for me, the easiest way to kind of keep up with friends and family.
Is it just the standard feed, or are you also consuming all the Insta stories?
Yeah, the Insta stories as well, and I kind of use that from a personal platform, but I don't post as much on the stories.
Yep.
But yeah, I think I love the fact at what they've been able to do there. And I think, it's been interesting just to see that evolve. And what we found, just as a kind of side note, is the number of traffic, web traffic that Instagram stories are driving, for us has been pretty significant. So we're putting a lot of content on there.
Yeah. It's been a bit of a hack to allow Instagram to drive traffic, because it's never driven traffic, because it was such a walled garden for so long. And even, you know, even the ad product doesn't drive a lot of traffic, because when you're in the standard feed, you're in double tap, swipe up mode, like show me more photos, show me more prettiness, double tap. And it's, you don't want to leave that environment, but the Insta stories has given that option of, here's the latest article, swipe up to view, and sending people to that content. So I think that's been really smart. To be able to, you know, because especially from a professional team point of view, or a media outlet point of view, Insta is great and we all love engagement. But in the end, you know, a big KPI is how many people are heading to our site, how many people are reading our content, what are people consuming? So they really had to come up with some way to change the behavior of Instagram users, because previously to leave Instagram, you would say, click the link in my bio. And it would like be four clicks till you got out. And so so many hurdles. So I think, you know, the ability on verified profiles to send people to an article, and yeah, I'm hearing the same things talking to different people, that people are super surprised how much traffic and engagement those articles are getting.
Yeah, it's been nice. And I think it's unique in the fact that you're able to do that, but they've kept the rest of the experience intact that other, you know, that you were used to and that you loved from the start. So I think that's been, you know, incredibly interesting how they've been able to evolve that. So yeah, that's probably my MVP. But, you know, I think Facebook is, from the larger business perspective, continues to be kind of incredibly important. And something that, just from the size and scale of it, from the advertising and revenue standpoint, is one that, you know, it still gets the bulk and the lion's share of the attention at work.
It is. And it is, you know, it keeps delivering, but it's also the data and the advertising model underneath that teams can leverage is just so powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the targeting that you can do, it's, you know, it's, you just can't find that elsewhere.
So lastly, where can we've already told people that no one's on Twitter anymore, but where can people find you, connect with you on the internet?
Yeah, so I do have a Twitter account, which is Jane B. Wise. Don't tweet often, so probably best place to connect with me is LinkedIn. I found that to be just a great way to network and connect with people over the years, so you can definitely find me there.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and I look forward to catching up soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Sean. Appreciate it.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Jane Busman Wise. You can find Jane on Twitter, Jane B Wise. That's Jane with a Y, J A Y N E B Wise on Twitter, or just Jane BW, a recent joinee to the SportsBiz Slack community. You can sign up as well by going to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. We are getting very close to the 1,000 members. So if you haven't joined up, please do. There's a whole bunch of people that have not accepted their invitations after signing up. That will tip us over the line as well. And if you haven't been in for a while, come back in. There's some really good chatter and conversations happening in there. Just before I wrap up this episode, I've been talking about the Sports Geek campaigns that we're almost ready to launch. We'll be reaching out to current clients and listeners first as a done-for-you campaign service to sort of take away some of that pain that some of you are feeling either on the partnership side or on the digital side. So please contact me if you're a digital team struggling with sponsor promotions. If you're a partnerships team finding it hard to understand the digital space and how to sell digital campaigns, if you're just under-resourced and can't deliver the campaigns you would like to deliver to sponsors, but probably more importantly, if you're underwhelmed by the campaigns you're currently running for your sponsors, and even worse, if your sponsors are underwhelmed. Unfortunately, you know, woo-foo forms and 25 words or less type of campaigns just don't cut it in 2017. So that's why we're really happy to partner with Tradable Bits on this initiative. So please email me, Sean@SportsGeekHQ, for more info. We're going to take a limited number of teams in the initial launch before we push it out wider. You can actually go to a landing page that we've set up to take registrations of interest. And obviously, the more, if I know you, if you're in SportsBiz Slack, if we've spoken before, we'll be more than happy to talk to you about it. You can go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com just to register your interest. There's a little bit of info there, but you're getting most of the info here in the podcast. And yeah, reach out to me. More than happy to talk about it in depth with SportsGeek podcast listeners. Until next time, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at SportsGeekHQ.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to SportsGeekHQ.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.